You're listening to We Love Where You Live, the podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Matt Bach.
Welcome to another edition of We Love Where You Live, the podcast. I am Matt Bach, Director of Communications for the Michigan Municipal League. And today I'm joined by Jennifer Rigtorink of the Lansing staff. And we're very honored to have Representative Gary Howell from North Branch with us today, who is one of our two Legislator of the Year Award winner recipients. So congratulations on that, Representative Howell. And I do want to thank you for your long years of service. You've been with the in municipal law, practicing municipal law for over 40 years. You served in overseas in Korea, I believe it was in the 70s. Just thank you for all the different levels of service that you provided to our state and our nation.
Well, thank you, Matt. I very much appreciate having received this award. It means a great deal to me. As you indicated, I'm a longtime municipal attorney and local elected official. So it's a matter that's close to my heart. And I value the award for the Michigan Municipal League.
So tell us a little bit about your background. You know, how did you, you know, really go from, you know, being a municipal attorney for over 40 years and you know, and then jumping in kind of the state level, you know, becoming a state rep? You know, I guess the simple question would be, what were you thinking?
Well, that's a very good question for anybody that gets into this game. In my particular case, the timing was exactly right. If you're an attorney and a practicing attorney, you really can't run for this job mid-career, take 6 years and go to Lansing and not lose most of your clients.
Yeah.
So it needs to be something, if you want to have a law practice, to either do at the beginning or the end of your career. So as I was nearing my normal retirement expectation, it happened that we had a scandal in our area. Todd Corser was the former representative. Through a series of unfortunate incidents, he was forced to resign from the House. It created a vacancy. At that point, I had just retired as an attorney, and my wife and I are actually on vacation with our grandkids. And the news came over the television, and first my niece leaned over to me and said, "Gary, Uncle Gary, you should run for the legislature." And so, gee, many Christmas. So Cheryl and I talked about it at great length as we were driving back from South Carolina to Michigan. And she said I should do it, and that was the deciding factor. So in I jumped with 11 candidates just in the Republican primary.
Yeah.
So it was quite a free-for-all. But in any case, the reason I chose to do it fundamentally is that I thought I had experience I could lend to state government and to the people that was fairly unique. And obviously at my age, I am not the least bit interested in being a career politician. Matter of fact, I'm looking forward. I'm going to work to the last day, but when my term ends, I'm going back to my farm in North Branch and focus on the grandkids and the family and the farm.
And you you're a longtime farmer. Oops, sorry.
Yes, I farmed all my life.
And your son now runs the farm with you?
Matter of fact, I wanted to be a farmer, but my dad said, "Gary, that's a great idea, but first find a way to make a living.
Oh.
And you can farm." And that's proved to be good advice. But anyway.
So, and you run the family farm, I believe, with your son, one of your sons? Or?
Yes. Yep, okay. One of our sons is in partnership, and we were out baling hay just 2 days ago, a matter of fact.
Wow.
How does your work sitting here in front of a video camera?
So you wear a lot of hats, attorney, a law legislator, a farmer, all those different hats.
Yes.
What one of the things that you did allude to already is your belief in local control, which is a big issue of the league, of our organization. Why are you so passionate with that issue? Why do you think that's important to have, you know, local governments, you know, be able to kind of make some of the decisions for themselves?
Well, you know, there is no more effective form of democracy than going to your local city council, village council, or township board and voicing your opinion. You can do that as an individual. You can do it easily. It's not so easy to do it in Lansing, and it certainly isn't easy to do it in Washington, D.C. So I really believe that if we're going to maintain a democracy in this country and real participation, the key is to keep as many effective decisions at the local level. I was first elected 50 years ago in 1970 when I was in the military in Korea, actually. My father submitted an affidavit for me to run for Republican precinct delegate in my township. And that's where I started, really. And so for the last number of decades, I've been very active in the Republican Party, as well as in local government. So it sort of led me over time to say, you know, Gary, if you're really going to have an impact, if you're really going to change anything or protect anything, it's your duty to get up there and do your part. As Teddy Roosevelt said, you need to be in the arena, win or lose, if you're going to have an impact.
Thank you for that. And I'll have you jump in a minute. But what is it like when you're fighting, particularly when you're fighting for local control, and sometimes, maybe your stances that you're taking aren't necessarily in line with your party. How do you approach, you know, that kind of delicate balance there?
Well, it is a challenge. The Republican Party, my party, really has two different strains. There are a number of us in the party who are more the nature of what I call small town Republicans, traditional Republicans, that view local businesses, local townships, cities, villages, as key to our philosophy, that if we really are opposed to big government, the logical thing to be doing is to be supporting local government to do those things that need to be done. But there's also the other strain in the Republican Party, which is much more corporate-oriented and business-oriented, and they clash at times. And as you know, when they clash, I come down on the side of local control. I'm dismayed at times at policy decisions we make, in that whenever an interest group can't win at the local level, they can't win the argument. They can't win the argument in the free exchange of ideas, and they're losing. What's their remedy? The remedy is to run to Lansing and say, hey, guys, why don't you just change the law? It'd be a lot simpler. We wouldn't have to deal with these darn citizens and these difficult local officials. We'll just override them. And I see that time and time, and I've seen it long before I got here. But it's a continuing process. It's the old eternal vigilance is the price of liberty, because we're going to fight and refight that battle in many contexts over a long period of time. So I'm not exactly a maverick, but I certainly am never going to be 100% on my party line.
Well, I think you people in generally want their politicians to stick to their views, whether or not it's necessarily in line with the majority. So I think that's very admirable. We really appreciate that. Jen, maybe if you could kind of jump in and ask him, talk a little bit with him of some of the things that he worked with, maybe some of those local control issues that were so important for us.
Well, I would just like to say congratulations and thank you, Representative. I'd also like to give a big shout out to your niece for her insight in encouraging you to run, because we at the League enjoy working with you so much. And I mean, just to what you just stated about, your views and understanding and your work in local government and in helping to bridge that gap to some of your colleagues who have never worked in local government, and how something in theory sounds great, but how it actually is practices and the unintended consequences sometimes is just so invaluable to us in working with you and others. So a couple of, issues that we have worked with you and when it comes to local decision-making, the short-term rental issue. I think a lot of times, as you said, when there's a group that's not getting their way, we very much appreciate your ability to sit the parties down to talk about, where are some of those key issues when it comes to, a straight up prohibiting versus at the local level trying to have those conversations of what makes sense in what communities. And same thing right now with the issue that we are talking about when it comes to aggregate mining and sand and gravel. And if you would like to say a few words about your views on those issues, we would appreciate it.
Well, I'm always happy to say a few words about my views, I can assure you of that. And thank you for the compliments. It goes both ways. It's a pleasure to work with you and your staff. In terms of the issues, the aggregate thing, of course, is the one that's hottest at the moment. And I think my background has really been helpful, because frankly, when you're taking on large financial interests who are able to employ very expensive large lobbying firms you need almost to be a truth squad and an educational squad. And as I sat in committee meetings in the Senate where they're considering this atrocious piece of legislation, and the interest groups were saying, we can't get anything approved. You know, us poor gravel miners, we just can't get a pit approved. The locals are unreasonable. They drag it out, blah, blah, blah. And I could go up and testify and say, listen, let me tell you about dragging something out. In my Metamora Township, where I was township attorney for years, they first sued us in 1985 to get a gravel pit at a location next to a Superfund site. We went to federal court. I tried the case. We beat them. In later years, after I retired as township attorney, they sued them two more times, went to circuit court, got beat both times. So if you do the math, that's 35 years they've jacked around that community, the village and the township. And yet they're crying to me that, you know, these people, they delay us for a year or two getting our approvals. Well, they're getting delayed a year or two because there are substantial public issues involved about trying to set it up so that the traffic, the noise, the environmental impact is taken into consideration. So I am not only passionate about the issue, but because I lived the issue, and I can testify that in all my 40 years, I probably handled 25 gravel pits. In some way, shape, or form, 24 of those 25 got approved, with conditions usually. There's one that's not been approved, but it's big, and the people that won it got a lot of money. And so they want to change the law because they cannot beat my little township in court. So anyway, that kind of informs my passion on this issue. I can wax eloquent on that, perhaps. The other issue you mentioned about the temporary resident situation in residential neighborhoods, that is a somewhat different kind of a local issue. But to me, that is the classic issue where local control makes the most sense. How can I set parameters at the state level? And I haven't got a clue about the unique condition in an individual city as to whether or not that a neighborhood should have two-week rentals, no rentals, five weekends a year. I just don't know what it should be, and I shouldn't know. That's not my job. I think my job is to say, if need be, let's set some guardrails as to what the parameters would be that are objective, that everybody can agree to, and then let the process go forward locally to work it out.
We talk a lot about that and how, you know, you really summarize the situation well about, and we talk about, you know, cookie cutter legislation. There's not one thing in most cases that can adequately or appropriately impact everybody. So, you know, it's really refreshing to hear you say, you know, that, you know, you look at these things issue to issue and decide, you know, the best. And like you said, very rare is there a law that does a good job of protecting or allowing or whatever the right word is there for everybody. So we appreciate your support on that issue. Is there any other issues, Jen, that Representative helped us a lot with that you want to mention?
Well, there are tons and tons of preemption issues that the representative has had on his plate since he came into office. I know another one that was big last session that we went after in lame duck was the preemption of tree ordinances. And I mean, I think that's just another example of one situation in one community. And then we were facing a statewide kind of, Matt, as you said, cookie cutter attack on it. And so we appreciate your insight on that. And if you have anything you'd like to say about that, we are constantly watching for that one to creep back up again.
Right. You know, that's a good example of what happens. In the law business, there's an adage that good facts make bad law. And the concept is that somebody comes to court with a really appealing situation. Their unique situation is truly horrendous. And the court occasionally gets carried away thinking, oh, I got to solve this problem, without realizing there are thousands of other problems that are not at all similar. But by changing the law and making that decision, in our case, legislature changing the statute, you are adversely impacting every community in the state. Yeah, the tree ordinance thing was entertaining, among other things. I mean, I found it, and I often do, but I was highly unsympathetic to the enterprise that was trying to overturn the ordinance situation. They didn't exactly have clean hands, in my opinion. And But more importantly, you make the key point that even if you can resolve an issue in one community, that doesn't mean that issue makes any sense for the communities in the state.
Thank you. Oh, we talked a lot about, the issue of local control and already mentioned, asked you a little bit about how's that delicate balance, when you're not necessarily aligned with your party. I know in other times I've seen maybe someone's gone kind of rogue with their party and they get almost blacklisted and get removed from caucus and all those things, but you still are very involved and you're highly respected. How do you still able to manage that? And what advice would you give to maybe, future legislators that are coming in and want to take that same kind of approach?
Well, we got two questions in there as I hear it.
Yeah.
One is, what do I do? And one thing is, I am deeply embedded in my party. I am at a different role. I am chairman of the policy committee for the Michigan State Republican Party, State of Michigan Republican Party. And so I deal with the leadership all the time on everything that comes up of a partisan nature. Plus, I've been around a long time. Having a gray beard is helpful sometimes to have more a little gravitas. And I think my unique position in that I'm doing this at the end of my career. I'm not running for anything else. I don't want to be a lobbyist. I don't want to be appointed to anything. So it lets me be independent to a greater degree than it would be if I was 35 years old and was concerned about what's my next job going to be.
Right.
So I've had that. And frankly, I try to be a reasonable man. I can get pretty passionate about some issues like aggregate mining. But setting that aside, I try to be reasoned, relatively soft-spoken about things, try to be convincing. And I think it's given me credibility in my Republican caucus so that when they come up with a local government issue, they at least will give it serious consideration if I raise issues in caucus. So it's the balance that I've been able to strike anyway. And I vote with my party the best. I'm a conservative in the end, so I vote generally with the Republicans, but I have some issues. I was not in favor of repealing prevailing wage, as a matter of fact, which was a hot button issue because I have a lot of respect for the trade unions and what they face. But that's a whole different issue that doesn't directly involve you folks. But it's something where I went off the reservation pretty dramatically because that was a passionate issue, as you know.
Right, right.
Not even sure all the court proceedings are fully resolved in that. But other part of the question. Did you have something, Jen, you wanted to ask?
I was just going to say to that point, we know that we're not always going to be on the same page, or position with issues. But again, your door is always open to hearing the viewpoints of the other side, and that we greatly appreciate. Even if we're not going to get to being on the same page position-wise, we appreciate your openness to hearing us out on why we are supporting or opposing something again.
And I do appreciate that. And I realize I didn't get the award because I voted 100% in your direction. I'm generally, as you can tell, philosophically in the same place you are. But there'll be days when we'll disagree. But we'll always have a reasoned discussion and we'll always try to find common ground and see if there isn't a way to skin the cat in a way that satisfies all parties. But anyway, going back to the other part of the question, which was sure. What would be my advice be to future legislators? And I think it's important not to get lost in the system. When you get down here, there are great pressures to follow the caucus. There are great pressures from certain interest groups. And by the way, that's another reason I appreciate the Municipal League. You come deal with me with a reasonable position. We talk about it. I don't appreciate heavy-handed lobbying. The lobbyists quickly find my door is not open if they want to come in and try to lean on me, so to speak. I'm not susceptible to that. But that exists in this business. And you need to be a fairly strong personality if you're coming in as a legislator to know when to say no, or perhaps more importantly, to know when to not commit yourself until you've heard every side of an issue. I learned that as a lawyer, that when you meet with your client initially, you can't imagine how this poor person was so put upon. But then you hear the other side, and you find out there are two sides to the coin, and perhaps there's a really middle ground in the truth. And I think far too often, inexperienced legislators end up taking positions before they really know what all the ramifications might be. In this business, unintended consequences are some of the greatest pitfalls. You pass something that looks simple, and all of a sudden you messed up a whole lot of other things inadvertently.
I think that's particularly the case with term limits that we have here in Michigan. You lose that kind of that institutional knowledge that you don't have. So people coming in, they, you know, have a year or two under their belt, and they think they might know all the issues, but they probably really don't, because there's so much history, you know, goes back on why certain decisions have been made, or, you know, that type of thing. So
you're right. Well, I think term limits are pernicious. It doesn't matter to me at my age. I'm more than happy to retire when my next term is over. But I think for most people, particularly if you're at a younger stage in your career, 6 years is unreasonable. It's harder to find good people that can drop out of their career for 6 years than try to pick it up again. And more importantly, unless you've had great depth of experience, it's hard to walk into these issues and be effective until you've sat through a lot of committee meetings, talked to a lot of interest groups, and really got a perspective. I've been blessed with my municipal experience, so at least when I'm talking about that, I can already bring experience elsewhere. But if I had to rely on what I learned here, it would be a much bigger challenge.
Right, like we didn't have to explain to you what revenue sharing was, but we do have to do it to a lot of other lawmakers, and it's complex, so it's complex. Tricky.
That is
so
true.
Representative Hall, we'll wrap up here. I do really appreciate it. One thing I did notice in your bio is you're both a U of M and Michigan State graduate. So where do you fall there? That's always a tricky one.
That was my ultimate political move. I joined Michigan State undergrad and U of M law school.
So I can
theoretically claim a win no matter who wins the game. But in truth, I'm a Michigan State fan.
Oh, Jen would be very happy to hear that.
Most of us who went to college, our bachelor's was much more of a formative experience. Besides, I viewed U of M Law School as a trade school. I went there to get my ticket to practice law. Being a conservative Republican, I didn't find Ann Arbor particularly receptive in the 1970s.
Probably not.
So I just swung through and got my degree. God bless them. They're wonderful people, but I'm green and white.
Well, I'm a CMU grad, so I'm kind of like Switzerland, I think.
There you go.
So, Representative Hall, I did want to thank you again for your time today, and again, congratulations on getting the Legislator of the Year award.
Thank you, and thank you to the Municipal League, and I definitely do look forward to working with all of you in the coming 3 years.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.nml.org. And join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.